Continuing with Birds of Prey by Wilbur Smith. Sir Francis paused to watch their faces and saw the terror of the cat in their eyes, mixed with relief that it was not them bound to the tripods. Unlike the captains of many privateers, even some knights of the order, Sir Francis took no pleasure in this punishment. Yet he did not flinch from necessity. He commanded a ship full of tough, unruly men, whom he had handpicked for their ferocity, and who would take any show of kindness as weakness. "I am a merciful man," he told them, and somebody in the rear ranks chuckled derisively. Sir Francis paused, and with a bleak eye singled out the offender. When the culprit hung his head and shuffled his feet, he went on smoothly, "But these rascals would test my mercy to its limits." He turned to Big Daniel, who stood beside the first tripod. He was stripped to the waist, and his great muscles bulged in arms and shoulders. He had tied back his long greying hair with a strip of cloth, and from his scarred fist the lashes of the cat hung to the planks of the deck like the serpents of Medusa's head. "Make it 15 for each, Master Daniel," Sir Francis ordered, "but comb your cat well between the strokes." Unless Daniel's fingers separated the lashes of the cat after each stroke, the blood would mat them together and clot them into a single heavy instrument that would cut human flesh like a sword blade. Even 15 with an uncombed cat would strip the meat off a man's back down to the vertebrae of his spine. 15 it is, Captain, Daniel acknowledged, and shaking out the whip to separate the knotted thongs, stepped up to his first victim. The man twisted his head to watch him over his shoulder, his expression blanched with fear. Daniel raised his arm high and let the lash stream out over his shoulder. Then, with a peculiar grace for such a big man, he swung forward. The lash whistled like the wind in the leaves of a tall tree and clapped loudly on the bare skin. "One!" chanted the crew in unison, as the victim shrieked on a high note of shock and agony. The lash left a grotesque pattern over his back, each red line studded with a row of brighter crimson stars where the knots had broken the skin. It looked like the sting from a venomous tendrils of a Portuguese man-of-war. Daniel combed out the lash, and the fingers of his left hand were smeared with bright fresh blood. "Two!" the watchers counted, and the man shrieked again and writhed in his bonds, his toes dancing a tattoo of pain on the deck timbers. "Avast punishment," Sir Francis called, as he heard a mild commotion at the head of the companionway leading down to the cabins in the stern. Obediently, Daniel lowered the whip and waited as Sir Francis strode to the ladder. Governor van der Velde's plumed hat appeared above the combing, followed by his fat, flushed face. He stood wheezing in the sunlight, mopping his jowls with a silk handkerchief, and looked about him. His face brightened with interest as he saw the men hanging on the row of tripods.
"Oh, ja, goed. I see we are not too late," he said with satisfaction.
Close behind him, Katinka emerged from the hatch with a light, eager step, holding her skirts just high enough to reveal satin slippers embroidered with seed pearls.
"Good morrow, Mynheer," Sir Francis greeted the governor with a perfunctory bow. "There is punishment in progress. It is an unsuitable spectacle for a lady of your wife's delicate breeding to witness."
"Nay, truly, Captain," Katinka laughed lightly as she intervened. "I am not a child. Heaven knows there is a great paucity of diversion aboard this ship. Just think, you would collect no ransom if I were to die of boredom."
She tapped Sir Francis's arm with her fan, but he pulled away from this condescending touch and spoke again to her husband.
"Mynheer, I think you should escort your wife to her quarters."
Katinka stepped between them as though he had not spoken, and beckoned Zelda, who followed her.
"Place my stool there in the shade."
She spread out her skirts as she settled herself on the stool and pouted prettily at Sir Francis.
"I will be so quiet that you will not even know that I am here."
Sir Francis glared at the governor, but van der Velde spread his pudgy hands in a theatrical gesture of helplessness.
"You know how it is, Mynheer, when a beautiful woman sets her heart on something."
He moved up behind Katinka and placed a proud and indulgent hand on her shoulder.
"I cannot be responsible for your wife's sensibilities. If they should be offended by the spectacle," Sir Francis warned grimly, relieved at least that his men could not understand this exchange in Dutch, and be aware that he had bowed to pressure from his captives.
"Nay, I think you need not trouble yourself too deeply. My wife has a strong stomach," Van der Velde murmured.
During their tour of duty in Kandy and Trincomalee, his wife had never missed the executions that were carried out regularly on the parade ground of the fort. Depending on the nature of the offence, these punishments had ranged from burning at the stake to branding, garrotting and beheading. Even on those days when she had been suffering the breakbone pains of dengue fever, and in accordance with her doctor's orders should have remained in bed, her carriage had always been parked in its accustomed place overlooking the scaffold. "Then it shall be your own responsibility, Mynheer," Sir Francis nodded curtly and turned back to Daniel. "Proceed with the punishment, Master Daniel," he ordered. Daniel threw back the whip high behind his shoulder, and the coloured tattoos that decorated his great biceps rippled with a life of their own. "Three!" yelled the crew as the lash sang and snapped. Katinka stiffened and leaned forward slightly on her stool. "Four!" She started at the crack of the cat and the high scream of pain that followed it. Slowly her face turned pale as candle tallow. "Five!" Thin snakes of scarlet crawled down the man's back and soaked into the waistband of his canvas petticoat. Katinka let her long golden eyelashes droop half-closed to hide the gleam in her violet eyes. "Six!" Katinka felt a tiny drop of liquid strike her, like a single spot of warm tropical rain. She tore her eyes from the wriggling, moaning body on the tripod and looked down at her graceful hand. A drop of blood, flung from the sodden lash, had landed on her forefinger. Like a ruby set in a precious ring, it sparkled against her white skin. She cupped her other hand over it, hiding it in her lap while she glanced around at the faces that surrounded her. Every eye was fixed in total fascination upon the gruesome spectacle in front of them. No one had seen the blood splasher. No one was watching her now. She lifted her hand to her full, soft lips, as though in an involuntary gesture of dismay. The pink tip of her tongue darted out and dabbed away the droplet from her finger. She savoured its metallic salt taste. It reminded her of a lover's sperm. And she felt the viscous wetness swelling up between her legs, so that when she rubbed her thighs together, they slid against each other, slippery as mating eels. There would be need for lodgings on shore while the Resolution was careened on the beach, her hull cleaned of weed and examined for any sign of shipworm. Sir Francis put Hull in charge of building the compound that was to accommodate their hostages. Hull took particular care over the hut that would house the governor's wife, making it spacious and comfortable, and citing it for privacy and security from wild animals. Then he had his men build a stockade of thorn branches around the entire prison compound. When darkness brought the first day's work to a halt, he went down to the beach of the lagoon and soaked himself in the warm, brackish waters. Then he scrubbed his body with handfuls of wet sand until his skin tingled. Yet he still felt sullied by the memory of the floggings he had been forced to watch that morning. Only when he smelt the tantalizing odour of hot biscuit floating across the water from the ship's galley did his mood change. And he thrust his legs into his breeches and ran down the beach to scramble into the pinnace as it pulled away from the shore. While he had been ashore, his father had written on the slate a series of navigational problems for him to solve. He tucked it under his arm, grabbed a pewter mug of small beer, a bowl of fish stew, and holding a hot biscuit between his teeth, darted down the ladder to his cabin, the only place on the ship where he could be alone to concentrate on his task. Suddenly he looked up, as he heard water being poured in the cabin next door. He had noticed the buckets of fresh river water standing over the charcoal fire in the galley, and laughed when the cook had complained bitterly that his fire was being used to heat water to bathe in. Now Hal knew for whom those steaming pails had been prepared. Zelda's guttural tones carried to him through the panel as she harangued Oliver, his father's servant. Oliver's reply was truculent. "I don't understand a word you say, you grisly old bitch, but if you don't like it, you can fill the sodding bath yourself." Hal grinned to himself, half with amusement and half in anticipation, as he blew out his lamp and knelt to remove the wooden plug from his peephole. He saw that the cabin was filled with clouds of steam, which frosted the mirror on the far bulkhead so that his view was restricted. Zelda was shooing Oliver from the cabin as Hal adjusted his eye to the aperture. "All right, you old trowel," Oliver baited her as he lugged the empty buckets from the cabin. "There's nothing you've got that would keep me here a minute longer." When Oliver was gone, Zelda went through into the main cabin, and Hal heard her speaking to her mistress. A minute later, she ushered Katinka through the doorway. Katinka paused beside the steaming bath and dabbled her fingers in the water. She exclaimed sharply and jerked away her hand. Zelda hurried forward, apologizing, and poured cold water from the bucket that stood beside the bath. Katinka tested the temperature again. This time she nodded with satisfaction and went to sit on the stool. Zelda came up behind her, lifted the splendid shimmering bundle of her hair with both hands to pile it on top of her head, and pinned it there like a sheaf of ripe wheat. Katinka leaned forward, and with her fingertips wiped a small, clear window in the clouded surface of the mirror. She examined the vignette of herself in this clear spot. She thrust out her tongue to examine it for any trace of white coating. It was pink as a rose petal. Then she opened her eyes wide and peered into their depths, touching the skin beneath them with her fingertips. "Look at these horrid wrinkles," she lamented. Zelda denied it vehemently. "Not a single one." "I never want to grow old and ugly." Katinka's expression was tragic. "Then you had best die now," said Zelda. "That's the only way you'll avoid it." "What a terrible thing to say. You are so cruel to me," Katinka complained. Hal could not understand what they said, but the tone of her voice touched him to the depths of his being. "Come now," Zelda chided her. "You know you're beautiful."
"Am I, Zelda? Do you really think so?"
"Yes, and so do you." Zelda lifted her to her feet. "But if you don't bathe now, you will stink just as beautifully." She unfastened her mistress's gown, then moved behind her, lifted the gown from her shoulders, and Katinka stood naked before the mirror. Hal's involuntary gasp was muffled by the panel and the small sounds of the ship's hull. From that slender neck down to her tiny ankles, Katinka's body formed a line of heartbreaking purity. Her buttocks swelled out into two perfectly symmetrical orbs, like a pair of the ostrich eggs Hal had seen offered for sale in the markets of Zanzibar. But there were childish, vulnerable dimples at the back of her knees. Katinka's own image in the clouded mirror was ethereal and could not hold her attention for long. She turned away from it and stood facing him. Hal's gaze flew to her breasts. They were large for her narrow shoulders. Each would have filled his cupped hands. Yet they were not perfectly round as he had expected them to be. Hal stared at them until his eye watered, and he was forced at last to blink. Then he let his gaze sink down over the slight but enthralling bulge of her belly and onto the misty cloud of fine curls that nestled between her thighs. The lamplight struck them, and they sparked purest gold. She stood a long time thus, longer than he had dared hope she might, staring down into the bath while Zelda poured perfumed oil from a crystal bottle into the water, and then knelt to stir it with her hand. Katinka continued to stand, her weight on one leg, so that her pelvis was tilted at an enchanting angle, and there was a small, sly smile on her lips as he reached up slowly and took one of her nipples between thumb and forefinger. For a moment, Hal thought she stared directly at him, and he began to pull away guiltily from his peephole. Then he knew that it was an illusion, for she dropped her eyes and looked down at the fat little berry that poked out rosily between her fingers. She rolled it softly back and forth, and while Hal stared in amazement, it changed colour and shape. It swelled and hardened and darkened. He had never imagined anything quite like this, a little miracle that should have filled him with reverence, but instead tore at his loins with the claws of lust.